You're listening to Boobies and Newbies, brought to you by the Frolic Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by one of Kensington's newest and spookiest titles, Demon Hunting with a Southern Sheriff by Lexi George. If you enjoy reading paranormal romance and you're also constantly charmed by fictional small town romance, then you'll love Lexi George's Demon Hunting series. When a gruesome shifter massacre rocks the community of Hanna, Alabama in the sixth and latest installment in the series, sexy Sheriff Dev Whitson needs more than a badge and a few silver bullets. He needs the help of an immortal demon hunter. Naturally, right? Now, as far as fictional small towns go, Hanna is charming but deadly. A town rife with sexy hunks, zany characters, and supernatural weirdness. Oh, my favorite. And while personally, I don't read a lot of paranormal or fantasy romance, urban paranormal and fantasy hit all of my sweet spots. Basically, so long as the werewolves also have Wi-Fi, fine by me. Plus, for anybody keeping up with the Boobies and Newbies 50 Romances, 50 States Reading Challenge, this one will tick off your Alabama read. You can find Demon Hunting with a Southern Sheriff by Lexi George wherever books are sold. Find out more at kensingtonbooks.com. And now, back to the show. Podcast that asks novice romance readers to think outside the dick in a box and brave the unbridled world of erotica. I'm your host, Kelly Reynolds, and today we are rounding out the month with a super, super steamy romance wreck. But along with the heat, this book comes with a whole heaping of trigger warnings, but we will get to that momentarily. First things first, I'd like to remind everybody that you can listen to past episodes of Boobies and Newbies on your favorite podcast app or on our website, boobiesandnewbies.com. You can find and follow the podcast across social media at Boobies Podcast. If you're a fan of the show and you've got 5 or so minutes to spare, I would greatly appreciate if you'd leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And last but not least, if you would like to show the podcast a little extra love, might I recommend you join us on Patreon? We've got monthly patron-only events, early sneak peeks, bonus clips, and so much more, and you can gain instant access to it for as little as $1 per month. You will, of course, find links to all of the above in today's show notes, and now, please join me in welcoming Kelly Booth, host of the recently released Squintcast, a Bones recap show. Welcome, Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. How are you?
Oh, woo! This Kelly is so always excited to meet more Kellys in general, especially Kellys who spell their name right.
Yes, the correct way. Exactly.
Yeah. If anybody's confused, Kelly is a K-E-L-L-Y.
Right. Sorry. I have to qualify as the proper Kelly, of course.
Always. Always. Like anytime I'm at Starbucks or something and they ask me, how do you spell it? I'm like, I tell them the right way just to see like what happens from there. But yeah, K-E-L-L-Y. None of that I shit. I don't want to see an I in your name, Kelly.
I was known to sort of experiment with my spelling when I was a teenager. I like to use the I with the heart over it. You know, I just, you know, trying it out way back in the 80s, you know.
I was going to say, if you do spell it with an I automatically assume that you're doing something with that dot above the I, whether it's a heart or like an exaggerated circle like that. Mm-hmm. That is that Kelly.
Okay, we won't get into the personality of that Kelly right now, but I hear you. I see you. I understand you. I totally know where you're going.
Well, Kelly, I'm super excited to connect with you, especially more so now knowing that the podcast you're launching is about one of my favorite shows of the last like two decades, Bones, which I just, I love. I can still rewatch it time and time again.
It is pretty great. I am actually a newbie to Bones. I was not really into Bones until the pandemic hit. And I was looking for, you know, a quick bingey kind of TV show. And I mean, you're talking hefty 12 seasons here. And yes. Then I got sort of halfway through season two watching it. And I thought, wow, this would be a really fun show to recap. I expressed my love for the show. I had showed a couple of scenes on my Instagram, some funny outtakes and things like that I thought were really hilarious. And a friend of mine on Instagram mentioned or said they loved Bones, and I thought, why don't I ask her to be on the show with me and we can talk about the show together? And it's really, her name's Brittany Elsner, and she's an amazing co-host. I couldn't have asked for a better, more willing participant in my my chaos. But she was totally game to join me, and we've been having a lot of fun and really excited to launch it finally after this sort of labor of love. And yeah, I'm really excited just in general.
That's awesome. Well, and I kind of love that the approach to it is sort of the boobies and newbies approach that we take to romance, which is, you know, I consider myself the boobie in this equation, and bringing on romance newbies to talk about the different perspectives that we bring to the same romance read. You guys are doing something similar with the show Bones. You're a newbie to the show, so I'm sure your view of it is going to be slightly different than that of Brittany's.
Well, yeah, I am coming to it with a different lens, obviously. There's a bit of an age gap between myself and my co-host, so there's that sort of kind of almost generational perspective. But also I'm viewing it through, you know, 2021, 2022 lenses, which is a, you know, anytime you look back at shows from the 90s and the early 2000s, you're going to run into some real problematic stuff.
Cringe so. Moments.
Oh, the sexism. Oh, so real.
Oh, the sexism. Yeah. You know, just some light machismo here and there.
Exactly. Nothing that a little bit of Booth won't heal, though. Come on.
Oh, my gosh. Well, and talk about, you know, and we'll get to sort of your experience with the world of romance in a moment. Mm-hmm. But from a romance perspective, Booth and Bones are like the quintessential slow burn friends, coworkers to lovers romance.
Oh, hey, wait. No spoilers, man. No spoilers, okay?
Nope. No spoilers, no specifics. I'm just saying it is set up from the very beginning. Like, I shipped them. I think a lot of people shipped them all the way. And so... Yes. Yeah, it's if you're in the market for a slow burn romance to watch, that isn't really a romance, but really is a romance, let's be honest. Bones is a great one to pick.
Well, the chemistry is off the charts. And I've decided that David Boreanaz, he has chemistry with literally everybody. Like if it was like a coffee
a
cup.
Flower pot.
Exactly. Just like a piece of pottery, he'd have chemistry with it.
That pot would be exploding into pieces.
Exactly.
I would watch it. I would him in a flower pot. I would watch the hell out of that. Well, I'm excited to check it out. As of the time of this episode's release, I believe Squincast will be out in the world so people can check it out. Are you guys on the socials? Where can people find you?
Yeah, well, I have my Instagram handle, Squintcast, and then I'm starting a TikTok. I do have a Squintcast TikTok. I'm hoping to figure out how to edit our video and have portions of our podcast video on the TikTok app as well. TikTok's one of my favorite vices right now, so if I could somehow incorporate my podcast into that, would be fantastic.
Okay, it's all a work in progress. I mean, it's, you know, one thing at a time.
Thank you.
And you know what, by the time you get it all set up, there'll be something new. There will be a whole new platform for you guys to hop on over to.
Exactly.
Well, I'm excited to talk about romance with you today. Mm-hmm. So let me tell everybody about what we're going to be reading. And today's book is What Happens in Chicago by Liz Crowe. This contemporary romance was published just recently, January 2022. It's available on Amazon for $5.99, Kindle edition. And I do just want to tell everybody that while this book is technically a standalone, you can read it, you know, on its own. There are some interconnected characters from Liz's previous book, What Happens in Denver, that do appear in this book too. So it might be helpful to read that book first, although I have read both of them, and I will say, I think you could also read What Happens in Chicago first and then read What Happens in Denver just to kind of get the full rounded perspective of all the characters involved. And then before we go any further, I do just want to issue a major trigger warning for our discussion today. This book deals very heavily with body dysmorphia and anorexia. There's also mention of the death of a parent and therapy scenes. So, you know, words of warning, if that is something you're not comfortable reading, might not be the book for you. If that's something you're not comfortable hearing us have a discussion about, this might not be the podcast episode for you. That is perfectly okay. That being said, this book is full of hot, hot, hot sex scenes. So if you are in the market for just some good old-fashioned, steamy, one-handed reading, there is some of that to be had in What Happens in Chicago as well. Now, before I give you the synopsis, I do just want to ask you, Kelly, what's your experience with romance? How much of a newbie are you?
I am such a newbie. It's not even funny. Okay, I will admit, okay, Danielle Steele and Jackie Collins have been on my reading lists, you know, way, I'm talking 90s. Seriously,
the 90s. The classics.
And they use a lot of like language. I always equate a romance or erotica with throbbing members. I always hear about throbbing members and heaving bosoms. And I know that there's a whole amazing plethora, myriad of erotica and romance out there. Yeah, there's amazing stuff available right now. I just don't, I come from a place of reading way back in the day, I mean, lots of literature. And then all of a sudden I started listening to podcasts and they completely ruined my reading. So
gotcha.
I don't read as much as I used to because I'm listening to podcasts constantly. So much so that I said, I have to read books. So I started listening to audiobooks because I was like, I'm going to be a dum-dum if I don't start reading a book.
I was about to say, if you're into podcasts and you're more into like the auditory sense of it, like you absolutely could do, you know, Audible or any sort of audiobook.
Well, I go to my library and I just check them out. So I've listened to a few books in the last 6 months or so. So I'm happy about that. I also, you know, I'm one of those people that falls asleep listening to podcasts. So it's hard for me to, the reading is hard to get back into, I really have to say. So yeah, I'm a complete newbie, 100%.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say it's definitely a big leap, I feel like, from 90s Danielle Steele to 2022 contemporary romance. Yes. So that's exciting. I'm glad. I'm always happy to meet a romance newbie and hopefully send them in a new direction on their reading journey.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Listen, at my age, any kind of spice is nice. You know what I mean?
Spice is nice at any age. Well, let me give everyone the brief synopsis for this book, and then we will dive into the spice to be had in this story because, oh boy, is there spice. So let's start with the Goodreads synopsis for What Happens in Chicago. Here we go. Sloane. So let me just preface this by saying this is a dual point of view romance. We get both the male and female perspective, and they've done the same thing in the synopsis. So the first part is from Sloane's point of view, second part is from Michael's point of view. Sloane, I figured it would be just another night at the club, another chance to put my parents' expectations and their pressure to return home behind me. But hiding from my issues by entertaining clients at an exclusive club in Chicago wasn't the erotic buzz it used to be. And then this smoking hot dude spilled bourbon down the front of my dress. Michael, what had at one time been sexy, illicit, and thrilling now felt like one more night stuck on a hamster wheel. I was bored to tears with the whole club scene, forced yet again to verify to everyone that I was as alpha as I claimed to be while continuing to hide from my responsibilities as part owner of my family's brewery. And then I literally ran into her. What happens between Sloane and Michael in Chicago seems like nothing more than a hookup, a scorching hot interlude for a couple of well-matched libidos. Once they realize that there are legit feelings involved, they find plenty of ways to deflect and sabotage their burgeoning relationship. When they both have to leave their beloved Chicago and go home to Michigan, Sloane to help an ill parent, Michael to salvage his family's famous brewery, things get even more complicated. Accepting the depth of their emotion for each other means acknowledging their own flaws, which makes for tough conversations, along with smoking hot makeup sessions. Okay.
Ooh la la.
There you have it. There you have it. So I'd love to just hear your like initial impressions, Kelly. What, just especially coming from somebody who hasn't read a romance novel in, say, 20 years, like I am all kinds of curious what you've got.
You know what? I was like, okay, I don't want to disparage any kind of like, writing books is very hard and it's like, wow. I really admire that somebody can do this. It's hard to put yourself out there. Mm-hmm. And this particular genre, I was just like, I thought the sex would be even more. You know what I mean? I was expecting more. I really was. Because you know what? I'll just tell you, like, I have my own experiences too, right, to draw on. So I'm not going to say that I'm, you know, a world traveling sexer, but I, you know, I've done some stuff. So
world traveling sexer. I feel like every time we record a new episode, there's some line that comes out that to me just screams it should be on a t-shirt. And so far in this episode, I'm going to need a t-shirt that says world traveling sexer.
I don't know. I just, okay. My impression was I like this dual. It was, I've never read a dual romance or whatever. I don't know what you called it, where you hear from
the
both.
Dual POV.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you get both of their points of view.
Right. I've never seen that before, really. And I just thought that was interesting. And I really didn't like Michael. I'll just going to say it right now. I didn't like him at all for probably 95% of the book. And then this book had the audacity to make me cry at the end of it. I was like, how dare you?
Oh.
How dare you after everything you put me through?
Emotions.
So all in all, like, it was just, I felt I was very connected to Sloane, honestly. The character of
interesting.
Sloane.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. No, I see. And this is, I like this. We each bring our own perspective to the story, obviously. And this is something I talk about on the show a lot, is sort of recognizing an unlikable heroine and like why you don't like her and like what the deal is. I found myself having more issues with Sloane than I did with Michael.
Oh, wow.
And
this
so
is great.
I found myself connecting more with Michael than I did with Sloane.
Wow. Okay, let's get into it. I hope the author's listening. Is Liz listening? If Liz, Liz,
and you know what, she probably is. Liz and I actually, at full disclosure, we are fairly good friends, and so
yeah, I'm just gonna say
we have a relationship.
Now, Liz, don't take anything I say personally. I'm just totally personalizing everything about this book. So your writing was great. In fact, the pace changed halfway through. The writing was just like, it switched. There was a switch that went off with the writing. I felt like she really got her groove on, and like the pacing was really good. The language was great. Like I thought something changed about halfway through that really like
I agree.
Changed the pace.
No,
or something.
I completely agree with you. That's actually, I feel like this, my one overall, I guess, negative critique is that it felt a little long to me, and I really loved when Sloane eventually starts getting like the help that she needs, that she recognizes that she needs help. She doesn't want to like actually act on it, but like she knows at least some piece of her that she needs help for her eating disorder. Michael knows it. He doesn't know how to help her. He tries, but like maybe
he
it
really
doesn't work
doesn't
in the
know.
Way he's trying. And at the same time, they both make so many mistakes, but I also like that they recognize that. That, like, even if they're not telling each other that, there's a part of them that's like, oh, God, I know I fucked that up. Like, I just sabotaged it. I shouldn't have said this. I acted out of anger. But I think when she does go to get help and they start to basically rebuild their relationship from the ground up, from that point on, I was 100% invested. Like, I think if we could have just gotten there a little bit sooner,
yeah,
it would have been an overall a more positive experience for me personally.
Yeah, like one or two less breakups and then just go straight to the sort of healthy relationship foundation building that they had after she went to get help, for sure. It was a lot. I couldn't believe. I was like, when I was reading it, sex, 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 and then eating disorder. Oh, my God. I couldn't believe it.
And it's like a prevalent part of the story, huge, too. Like, I mean, I will say I was a newbie to this kind of narrative because I don't remember ever reading a book, let alone a romance, that the main character is actively having an eating disorder throughout the story. Like, this isn't something of the past. This is something they are actually experiencing it as we are reading. Yeah. And that was new for me. But at the same time, I really appreciate Liz writing that.
Exactly.
Because why not? Like, I think it's a great example of you don't need to be quote unquote fixed. You don't need to be trauma free, baggage free to deserve love. Mm-hmm. Like, people don't just fix themselves overnight. And that was actually the one thing, is the more I thought about it, I was like, oh, I wish this was a little bit shorter. I wish we got to see mm-hmm. their healthy relationship a little bit longer. But at the same time, I also recognize that that's not even necessarily realistic. Like, I know that this doesn't, with somebody who has this much trauma for so many years, mm-hmm. it doesn't just go away. Yeah. Like, that, it made sense to me that so much of it was rooted in her eating disorder.
Yeah. Well,
but it didn't make it any less uncomfortable. That's for sure.
At first, yeah, I was really uncomfortable with this whole journey. And then I was like, okay, wait a minute. Because I appreciated, this could open up a door to, like, people having romance novels with people who have mental health issues, or, you know, you could do all kinds of stuff, addiction issues, all kinds of stuff.
And they're out there, by the way, Kelly.
I'm sure.
I know that you haven't read them, but they are out there, but there's not as many as I think there should be.
Right. I just find that's, like, more realistic, because I was thinking this romance would not last 5 minutes in Toronto, like in the city where I live. This relationship would have ended and they would have parted ways and nothing would have happened, you know, but they kept pursuing each other. So anyway, I hope that answers your question of my overall thoughts on them.
No, I mean, it's clear that we both kind of were really intrigued by the situation at hand, especially with Sloane. Mm-hmm. As far as Michael goes, I'm trying to... I'm really curious to hear about, because I think he makes a lot of mistakes, but at the same time,
oh my God,
I think Sloane does too. So I'm really curious to hear your beef with Michael.
I thought he was such a dick. Like, he was just like, I was like, Sloane, no, go find someone else. No, not him. I just thought he was such a cad, and the way he talked about her, even in his I don't know what you called it.
Like, internal.
Yeah. Like, he called it her eating disorder baggage. And he was just very cold about it. And just the way I felt he was like a trigger for her constantly to go back mm-hmm. on going back to her old habits and stuff like that. So I just thought he was just so insensitive in so many ways until the end, you know, until he wrote the letter and everything. So
I agree with that for sure. I do think, especially the way it starts, like, they both are, it's a very toxic relationship to start with.
Incredibly.
Like, I think at one point, I forget if it's him or Sloane, but they called the relationship volatile, and I was like, oh good, I'm glad it took us 300 pages to recognize this. Like, it's that's just the one thing, is that they both keep coming back to each other because the sex is so good, but they're using it to avoid communication. And I think that goes both ways, though. Like, I don't think he understands what he's doing and the role he's playing. Because we even see that when they get to their therapy scenes and they start having the group therapy, there were moments where I was like, dude, you need to settle down and listen for a moment. But right. but the therapist even said that, too. She's like, look, you have to understand, sitting down with him, he's going to resent you a little bit. He's going to have issues. He's going to feel like it's his fault. But because of that, he's going to lash out at you. And I was like, that's annoying as fuck, but it's also real. Like, I feel like it was very accurate in kind of not in a healthy way.
I hear what you're saying. There were certain points where he's such a control freak. Like,
yes.
The whole thing where he stalks her to her gym, the stalking really bothered me. He stalked her a few times, actually. And she's a vulnerable girl. And I'm saying girl because she's 26 years old. It's very clear at the beginning of the novel. She's 26. He's 34. And I kept thinking back to when I was 26 and how it's just such a vulnerable, she's in a vulnerable place, like mentally, all that stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Stalking her. And then the scene where he's forcing her to write down her goals on paper that, and stuff. I was like, who are you?
That was one of those scenes where I was like, this should be the moment that he realizes I'm not going to be able to help her because I don't understand it. Like, I don't have the power to help her through an eating disorder. What do I know about eating disorders? And I feel like there were moments that would like almost do that. Like, there was another scene where I think it's after, where he tries to make her write down her goals. There's another scene where he's always trying to make her eat. And like, So it's one of those things where it's like, I can understand it from like the outsider perspective of like, you don't understand what this person needs. You're not a licensed therapist. You're not a doctor. I feel like it's the same response that I would probably have if, like, I noticed a friend having an eating disorder. And, like, I would think of myself as, like, oh, this is me helping. You know, it's as easy as me saying, here, eat. But of course it's not. Like, of course it's not. No. That's the naive, I want to save everybody and help.
Well, that's also codependency, but we'll talk about that. That's another episode. But I was just thinking, like, he's very, it's a very ego driven thing for him. And like, there's a couple of times where is it okay if we talk about this sort of sporadically? I apologize.
Oh, for sure.
I'm going all over the place. But where they go to vacation with his brother and his wife at the time, and he literally gets so angry with her for not eating, and then he stresses out about her eating. So I was just, as we're talking, I was thinking, I'm going to disclose something about myself, and it's perfectly fine. I'm very open about this, is that I'm a person who is sober. I've been sober for 15 years. I'm involved in a program, and I equate this eating disorder issue perhaps with addiction. It is similar to addiction. And Michael is suffering as a person who lives with somebody or who is in a relationship with somebody who's suffering with this addiction or eating disorder. And I understand that there are programs for people like that, who are living with people with these types of ailments or whatever you want to call it, these kinds of problems. So I'm coming from a different perspective, right? Like, I look at Sloane, I look at how old, like, her being 26, suffering, vulnerable, all these things. She's very dramatic. And I was very dramatic when I was 26, honey. Like, honey.
I think we all were, whether we recognized it or not.
I was like, everything was the end of the world. I blew the lid off everything. There were plates being thrown. There's stuff broken all over the house. Like, listen. I've done that. I totally get it. So maybe that's why I sort of empathize with her and wanted her to run away from him as far as possible because he was not helping her at all at the beginning. But I just, he really got me in the end, that damn guy.
I think that's thank you so much for sharing that, though, because I think that is a great perspective to bring to it. Because even Sloane talks about how she just, in her mindset, is either I can't eat or else I eat everything. So, like, in that regards, it does seem, it is like an addiction.
Well, it's maddening to live with somebody like this. I understand that. Yeah. Like, it's absolutely frustrating, maddening. And he did say that a few times in his POV stuff, like his internal monologue, talking about how angry he was with her at the same time that he was like helpless. You know, it's his anger and helplessness that he felt, like this constant. It's hard to live with somebody who's going through that, for sure.
Well, and the truth is, she shouldn't be with anybody right now. Like, exactly. I mean, that's the thing, too. And I think it does get to that point eventually when she does seek treatment, is like, I need to step back and look at what's going on in my life. This isn't about you. This has nothing to do with you. Put your ego aside and just recognize the fact that I can't. It's that whole idea of like, I can't be somebody's partner until I'm like, good on my own. Like, I have to stand on my own. So you know, they were doomed from the very beginning.
Yeah, but don't worry, guys, they had lots of sex. Okay, so let's talk about that.
And it's a happily ever after. It's still a romance novel. I don't know if you know this, Kelly, but just sort of our understanding of what constitutes a romance today is that it ends happily, that there's a happily ever after between the couple. So regardless of all of the events in between, they do end up together, and they end up with each other as better versions of themselves than when they started. So, I mean, I think that's a great takeaway. And like I said, I think the second half, maybe the last like third of the book, when she's getting treatment and beyond that, are really lovely. It's just a lot of drama for sure leading up to it. And I think it just depends on your level of discomfort when it comes to reading this book, of like, are you willing to kind of sit down and be frustrated with these characters who you want to be okay and be with each other, but like, you know that they're not okay and they know that they're not okay. And you just keep, there were just so many moments where I would just shake my fists. I'd be like, What's it going to take? What's going to be the breaking point for you guys to figure out what's going on?
Oh my God. I know. My notes consist of, I basically, because I do a recap podcast, I'm basically recapping the book in my notes. So I have like 4 or 5 pages of just the timeline and some little comments and things like that.
Let's start with, these were the two notes that I took throughout the book.
Sure.
These are what I would call more petty notes. One, the amount of times that these people go to strip clubs. Like, let me tell you, I lived in Chicago for 2 years. I know of one gentleman's club while I was there. And the only reason I know where it is because it's right next door to what used to be Improv Olympics, IO Comedy Theater. God. It was like IO, this gentleman's club, and then across the street was a Whole Foods. And I just thought that was so funny. But they meet at a strip club. They both go to strip clubs on the regular. Like, he takes clients there all the time, which I was like, okay, that, you know, I don't like it, but like, I can see that being a thing. And then for her, she just likes going and like being a boss ass bitch in power and like having men fawn over her and then have sex upstairs in these private rooms. And I just was like, wow, this is like a whole side of Chicago that I wasn't aware of, but good on you.
Yeah, like in Toronto, there's lots of strip clubs, but like in terms of like a sex club, there's probably one or two and, you know, that type of thing. But this club seems like it really caters to every need.
Yes.
So you can watch the strippers, you can have a drink, you can go have sex, you can spend the night even.
Yeah.
In like these hotel style rooms.
Yeah, this is some fancy elite strip club.
Very
shit.
Fancy.
Like this, unlike any club I've ever seen.
I was actually surprised how there was strip club action and then none for a very long time, and I thought, did Michael stop taking his clients there or something?
I think it's because they left Chicago for like a good amount of the book, because like the strip clubs that they were going to was in Chicago, and then a good amount of the time they also spend in Michigan because they're both from Michigan. They both have business and family in Michigan. So, by the way, if anybody is playing along with our 50 romances, 50 states reading challenge, you could knock out either Illinois or Michigan with this book. Lots to choose from. So there's that. I will say, too, I kind of love that Sloan was going to the strip club, too. And this is something that I know from reading other books of Liz that she doesn't shy away from kind of creating like what I would think of as like more subversive female characters. Like I know that she's written stories that talk about abortion. I know that, you know, from this book, we have somebody with an eating disorder who also likes to get it at the strip club. She wrote a book, I think, around the Kentucky Derby where the characters were over 40. Like I love
what a relief.
Yeah, and that's
I was wondering
love
about middle-aged sex stuff because I'd love to. I was like, maybe I should just write one about menopausal women getting it on.
And again, it's there, but there aren't enough. It's right up there with, you know, anybody that's neurodiverse or dealing with any sort of anxiety or mental disorder. Like we want to see more. We're starting to see it. Are there a ton of them? No. But the other petty note that I had was,
yes,
man, oh man, do they drink a lot of water in this book? Like,
that's so funny. You would think that's so funny.
And the only
bottles of water.
Yes, the only reason it stood out to me, and I'm gonna send Liz an email about this, just because I thought it was so fucking funny that every time that they had sex, and even other times when they weren't having sex, they would each have a bottle of water, and there was always mention. Yeah, he would always finish his bottle of water. It'd be like, yeah, he crushed that bottle and like threw it off to the side. Yeah. I'm like, damn, these people are hydrated. Yeah. Like, so yeah, that's not a negative.
Oh my God. Well, she drank a lot of water because I think her eating disorder,
to avoid,
that's what people do in that situation. But yeah, he did drown a lot of bottles. That's 100%. That's an interesting petty note. I have petty notes, but they're small and they're all over the place.
So, oh, hit me. Know. Let's hear some of your petty notes.
Well, I'm just like, when they were, spoiler, I have a sex excerpt and it's from the airplane, but also they are disgusting people who don't clean up after themselves. And it's really gross what they do with their toys. And I don't know, I'd have to have a talking with to Sloan and Michael.
When don't they clean up after themselves? Because she specifically says like clean toys or good toys or something.
Who cleans their dildo? First of all, put it in my vag, put it in your butt, then uses airplane water to wash her dildo? Sorry?
I will say,
that's gross.
I did make a note where I was like, ooh, I feel like you should clean this after you take it out of you before you put it into him.
Exactly. And then they left cum literally on the window. Like, there was like, cum. I was like, gross.
Yeah, that's okay.
Their toy hygiene was questionable.
But I do love that there were toys. Let me tell you, this is probably my favorite thing about Michael, first of all, was that he was super into butt stuff. He was super open about literally whatever sexual act fantasy that Sloan was interested in. And this is something that I wish we saw in more romance. Like, I am all for butt stuff in romance in general, but I especially love seeing it when it's with men and men who have sex with women and who aren't afraid to like take a finger up the butt and enjoy it. And in this case, she uses toys on him and she tells him, I want to see you have sex with another man. So he does. Like, I loved that.
Yeah, that's super modern, very progressive. I'll give him that for sure. I mean, he's pretty much willing to have sex with anyone or anything at any time. So it's pretty good. I'll give him that. Points for Michael.
you get a point. Your communication sucks, and I question your judgment, but you have good sex.
And there were just little things like when Michael was on vacation with his brother, how they made it. There was a point that was made that he was drinking low alcohol beer. And I was like, why isn't he drinking like his own family's beer? I don't get it. Like, why is he drinking low alcohol beer?
Now that you mention that, I do remember that line. And I was like, huh. I only give it 3 stars because he drinks low alcohol beer and they don't clean their toys.
Lightweight.
Now, I will say there is some mention of James and Andy in this book. And just to clarify for anybody listening, what happens in Denver is the first book in like this interconnected duet, I guess you could say. And that book is all about James and Andy. So James is what's-his-face's brother, Michael's brother.
Michael's
brother. By the way, it's Michael, not Mike, not Mikey. It is 100% Mikey. Michael. Like, he is like, I only go by Michael. I'm like, we've all known that person who, you know, is like, oh, my name is Shannon. Don't call me Shan. Like, it's Shannon. Like, okay. But yeah,
you know, triggered much. Jesus. Anyway.
But yeah, so we have James is Michael's brother, and that there's also some business they talk about in this book of like taking ownership of like their family's beer empire. And more of this is covered in what happens in Denver. Sloane is very much like a periphery character in What Happens in Denver. You do know about her eating disorder in that book. You don't know to what extreme, you know, because it's from Andy's point of view. It's from Andy and James's point of view. So you basically get to see a lot of the same scenes that we see with James and Andy in this book, but from Sloane and Michael's point of views.
That's cool, because I did notice when I finished the book at the end, it says, check out these titles. And I was like, oh, look, Andy and James.
Yeah.
I'm curious because she's supposed to be quite buxom and voluptuous. So I that might be interesting to read for sure, because she's like a totally different body type and, you know, probably a little bit different in terms of tastes and stuff.
Well, so. And what's really funny is that book is, I will say, I really enjoyed both stories, but What Happens in Denver is nowhere near the heat level of this book. Oh. Like this book, and Liz had said when What Happens in Denver came out, she's like, I know it's not like the hottest, but get ready for the next one. Like, because if this one is like a 10 on the heat scale, What Happens in Denver is like a 3. Like, I mean, they're just very different. I think there's a lot more comedy in that one. And again, it makes perfect sense because you're focusing more on James and Andy as opposed to, you know, the internal struggle that like Sloane's going through in this story.
Right. We got to talk about the sex. Girl.
I was about to say, for a book that has so many sexerps to choose from, do you have a specific favorite scene that you want to share and or discuss?
Well, I mentioned it earlier. I was trying to think like, oh, what's sexerp? And I was, I kept going back to the airplane. I'll be honest.
Okay.
And I'm just trying to figure out what page it's on. Oh, here we are.
I haven't bookmarked.
I will read it. It's long-ish, but
yeah, it is.
Suck it up. Literally.
And she does.
So much sucking. We'll talk about the blowjobs in a minute, but here we go. They're on the plane. And she's putting on a show. He ran one hand up my back to my neck and slid his fingers into my hair. He closed them into a fist and gave my hair the slightest tug. I felt the pre-cum on the thick head of his cock as he pressed it against my lower spine. Dear God, but had I finally met my match, a man who liked it as hard and nasty as I did. So far, that seemed to be the case. I decided to test the theory. Fuck my ass, Michael, I said. His fingers tightened in my hair. What? His hoarse voice broke on the single word. I smiled and bent all the way over the back of the couch. Grab the lube, I said, pointing out where we'd left it at some point, having used it for one of the vibrators he'd brought for me. Put plenty on that awesome dick and fuck my ass. I wiggled my ass in case he was confused. I'd done this before, and I knew guys liked it. It represented a lot of things, not the least of which was a fulfillment of the latent homosexuality most of us walked around with. We were all wired for it. Some of us just didn't have the drive strong enough to act on it. The eagerness at which he snagged the lube, coated himself, then used his fingers to put some inside me, told me all I needed to know. It hurt at first, but if this was his first time doing anal, I was the queen of fucking England.
Girl, I think you got a career ahead of you in, like, audiobook narration.
Woo!
Oh, my God. Like I said, there's so many good ones to choose from. We have her getting anal. We have... I also love when she... Mm. I mean, I know they don't clean it the way that you prefer, but I love... I do love that, one, she uses a dildo on him, but also that it's a glass dildo. I feel like I don't get to read a lot of glass dildos in romance. Like, we need to give glass dildos the love they deserve.
I hear they're great. I personally, I'm an old lady. I'm old school. I don't really, glass dildos seem scary to me.
It's good, especially for, like, temperature play. Like, if you're really into... like the hot and cold, like if you like freeze your glass dildo and like keep it chilled and everything, like that's something that I think appeals to a lot of people. But yeah, that's the thing is I'm like, if that's not for you, like don't.
My vagina is a frozen wasteland.
Oh my God. Well, so I want to share a piece from one of the final sex scenes. And this is when it's actually like a group sex scene. And he... Okay, from my understanding, it's the same strip club from the beginning, but it's like he rents it out and is like, I'm going to fill this strip club with all these men and women who like want to maybe have sex with us and are clean and want to watch us have sex, specifically to bring her fantasy to life, which I'm like, she never did talk about doing it publicly, but at the same time she wasn't upset about it. So what a commitment. Like, he went the extra mile to like make this thing happen.
he is a control freak, so
I was like expecting them to just have like one other person over to their apartment and like
I thought it was gonna be his brother for a while, like the way they were going.
But no, it was a public groups sex show at the strip club. So this is a brief passage from what's happening is like she really wants to see him get fucked by another guy. And so that's starting to happen. But she's also in front of Michael so that he can fuck her while another guy is fucking him, which I'm like, yes, love. We'll start with. I moved toward the pillows and piled them up, propping against them so I had the best possible view. The third man was on his knees, too, moving slowly, pressing deep into Michael's ass. They both shuddered and closed their eyes. I couldn't stand not being in on it. I crawled back to them, positioning myself in front of him so that with every thrust from behind, Michael's cock was shoved into me, filling me as only he could do. His eyes opened. They were full of a pain and pleasure combination that I totally understood. He grabbed me, kissing me hard, his tongue owning my mouth the way his cock was owning my pussy. I love that sentence. Then he shoved me so I was on my back. His fingertips dug into my hips, pounding into me. Guy number two started tugging my nipples, and I was gone, as in over the edge, as in blind and deaf and stupid from the raw craziness of this moment.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
He's really, the other thing I noticed, I did make note that he's really into quickies, a lot of quickies. He doesn't seem to last very long, but he goes like many, many times, which, honey, as a woman who is very busy and I don't have a lot of time on my hands, give me a quickie any day of the week.
Yeah, anytime I read a romance and they're like, and we made love all night long, I'm like, who's got the time and energy for that? No. I need to sleep.
No. I need to sleep. I have like laundry to fold. I have like, I have so much to do. I have so much of emails to write.
There's no time. I don't have time. I get my best chores done when like, or even writing time when I'm doing laundry, because I can set a timer. I can be like, okay, I've got 40 minutes until these clothes need to go into the dryer. What can we accomplish in 40 minutes? That's the level of fucking that I'm looking for in my romance. It's like, we have a time limit. Get it done. Let's go.
Good for you. That's great. I'm an asshole. I get my laundry sent out.
Ooh.
Not because I'm fancy, but because I'm a dirt bag. I refuse to go to the laundromat. So.
Well, it is Toronto. It's cold. It's inconvenient.
Not just that. I spent my childhood in laundromats, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just like, I don't want to do it anymore. I'm done.
You've moved beyond the laundromat.
Exactly.
I don't think Michael's ever spent a day in a laundromat. So you guys have something in common. No. He sends his clothes out too.
Yeah, he totally sends his clothes out. So maybe I am the Michael in this relationship. No. I don't know.
The things we learn about ourselves while reading romance.
I just want to say, like, sex-wise, Michael's into quickies. Mm-hmm. Sloan likes to give blowjobs. I still, to this day, it's 2022. Why do men want to choke women with their dicks? Like, what is it about choking? Like, why is that hot?
I honestly think there's a way, because I've read it before. I think there's a way to make it very sexy, but I think it helps if it's from her perspective as opposed to his, because I'm thinking specifically about a Fiona Cole book. She gives this incredible blowjob on an airplane, ironically enough. All these like rich dudes in their planes.
How do they do that? Oh, I guess it's private.
Yeah, but no, it was definitely like a deep throat face fuck scene. And because it was from her point of view, I was like, wow, this is actually really hot. Like, and that I'm with you, though. That's not my typical reaction to face fucking in general.
Yeah, like I could probably write something about blowjobs. But I personally, this is like full disclosure, I'm being really honest, I love giving blowjobs. I think they're so great. I love them. And I could probably write all kinds of details about them. But the choking, I could do without.
Well, and I will say there's several scenes where he talks about how much he loves going down on a woman in general. And there's scenes where she, you know, talks about how much she likes blowjobs or whatever. But the one scene where I was like, ooh, this is like a good blowjob scene is where I think she's actually sitting up in bed and she's like, come here, like, come closer. And it's where he's like kneeling in front of her face. And it's not her on her knees. It's not her, you know, on the ground and him on the bed. I liked that because that's a different dynamic, I feel like, with a blowjob as opposed to like, I'm kneeling in front of you. You're in control. Mm-hmm. And that was one that I found really hot.
Yeah, that was a good blowjob. I agree.
I think it's Cleus Press publishes an anthology every year called Best Women's Erotica. And they definitely do other ones. Like they do Best Bondage Erotica. I'm going to have to suggest that they do like Best Blowjob Erotica or Best Oral Sex Erotica. Because I feel like if we could eroticize the act more, then I think a lot more people would be inclined to do it.
Yeah, that'd be
and
great.
Enjoy it. Yeah.
For sure.
Well, another project for another day. But in the meantime, let's give this book a few grades. And we will be grading on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the very best that it could possibly be, subjectively, of course, for you. And we will be grading for heart, humor, and heat. So let's start with heart. What do you think?
See, the thing is, it didn't really get very, like, emotionally truly intimate until the end, right? So I don't think the heart's that high. Honestly, that's my reasoning. It's because they didn't really get to know each other till the end.
Yeah, I agree. I would agree with that.
5. I'll go 5.
Yeah, and I was thinking along the lines of like 4 or 5 because...
Oh, thank God.
No, I'm with you. I think it's because the heat is just... off the charts. And because they focus on they always go back to sex. It's always like a draw. Like there's at one point where he's thinking about proposing to her and he doesn't. And I was like, and he tells her, he's like, I was going to propose to you, but now that I didn't, I realize it would have been a mistake. I'm like, you think? Like, because y'all haven't had a conversation outside of the bedroom.
And this is like, I was just looking at that part of my notes because he was thinking about proposing to her after he revealed in his inner monologue how he'd been forcing her to weigh herself every morning.
It was not the time. No, like, and they're clearly drawn to each other, but I don't think until she seeks treatment that there's really enough of an emotional connection between the two of them. Like, they do say, I love you. And I'm not here to doubt anybody saying that they love somebody. I mean, for some people, it takes a few days. For some people, it takes a few months. Like, totally up to you. But it wasn't there for me. Like, if I was in a relationship with either of them and this was our relationship, the love wasn't there at that point. So, yeah. I think it's definitely lower than the Heat. That's for sure.
Definitely. We're going to go sky high with the Heat.
Oh,
but
yeah.
What's the next one? What's the next one?
Humor, which I know is not every romance. It just happens to be that, one, I love alliteration. And two, when I am looking for romance to read, the things that I am generally drawn towards are funny contemporary romances. So, of course, I'm looking for humor in my books. I knew going into this was not going to be a funny romance. Like, for me, this is probably going to be a not applicable as far as humor goes.
I was going to say, Kelly, either NA or basically these people have no sense of humor. They have no self-awareness of their own, like, I don't know, man. I was like, there's no humor at all. They had no...
No, there was like some flirty banter, but like...
Yeah, but that's not funny.
No. Yeah, and that's... And it's not a rom-com. And just with the subject matter alone...
I know, it's so heavy.
It can't be hilarious. Like, if it was, it would be wildly inappropriate.
I know, it's like, ha ha ha, look how skinny you are. No.
Yikes.
Bad.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be a NA for me.
I'm with you.
Heat, on the other hand.
Okay, I know I said at the beginning I was disappointed how, like, I wanted there to be more sex. You know what it is? It's because I've listened to some of your other episodes and you had, like, you know, thruples and... But, you know, after talking to you, I guess you're right. Like, a lot of this stuff, the blowjobs, the anal, all those things are pretty, for a lot of people... risque, or, you know, more, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for. I'm at a loss for words today. But anyway, Heat, I'd say for me, don't judge me, Liz. Forgive me. I'm going to go 8.
Totally fine. I think in keeping in line with the scale that I've established for the podcast, it's going to be a 10 for me. Like, I mean, the amount of, it's so funny to me, too, that I'm talking to somebody who is a romance reading newbie. And one of the first things you said about this book was that it could have been hotter. And we're talking about a book that must have 8-9 sex scenes and
minimum,
there's anal play and group sex. Like,
OK.
No, you keep your scale. Look. If it's comparatively speaking, I have to tell you, at the time that this episode releases, I'll have already recorded one of our March episodes. And it has, I think, probably the most amount of sex I've ever read in a romance novel, to the point where I was just like, good God, do they ever. In fact, one of the things we ask in the episode is, are they hydrating? Where's the water? Because they are just going. This, on the other hand, I felt that there was at least some breaks, like, from the sex scenes. But regardless, I think because of the, you know, different kinds of sex they have, the different locations that they have. Like,
right. And they use toys, too. I know. They use it all. Toys. They do it all, for sure.
Yeah. I'm with you. I can always do with a little bit more, except for that book. In March, I could have done with a lot less.
Oh, really? You're like, okay, guys, let's take a minute here. The other thing too is Kelly, I'll be honest, I'm dead inside, so it's probably contributing.
Oh no, me
to...
too. That's great. Maybe it's a Kelly thing.
No, it's a middle-aged woman who with zero sex drive anymore, and I'm nonplussed. I'm just kind of like, meh. Nothing excites me anymore, you know? It's one of those things.
I'm more of dead inside in that it's very rare for me to have, like, a cry or something, like, when I'm reading a book or something. Like, for me to have, like, an emotional response is, like, huge. So, like, I was touched by the end of this one, but did I cry? No. Like,
I did.
And good for you. So you're not completely dead inside.
No. Well, the hormones don't help, but I was just like, you know, I was mad about crying. I started crying and I was laughing at myself as I was crying. I was like, you idiot. Like, what are you crying about?
This we're is dead crazy. In different ways. Between the two of us, we're almost a fully live human being.
Almost. Or we're just the most zombie-ish. I don't know what we are, but anyway.
Oh gosh. Well, there you go. How do you feel now having read what I guess would be like your first contemporary romance in a long time?
I like that these novels are, because as I said, I've listened to some of your episodes, so they seem like sort of on the shorter side. You know what I mean? They're not too, like, they're not 700 page, you know.
Oh, absolutely not.
Covering a whole era of time kind of thing. But it has actually helped me not only want to read other romance, but also just books in general. Like, it's helpful to just dive back in and try to get back in the habit, because I do miss it. I miss reading. Mm. And like I said, the writing really picked up that about halfway through, something changed and she got her groove on. And it was amazing. Like, just everything changed and it went really, really quickly. But I appreciate your introducing me to this new genre. I don't have to be a snob and only read, you know, nonfiction and literature now. I can read some romance too. It's fun to read something fun. Like, I should be less rigid and vigilant, like just be more open to this genre.
It doesn't have to be an 800 page biography about the Korean War. Like, you can you can read something just for enjoyment. There's nothing wrong with that.
That is so cool that you say that. That's an interesting thing. I'm sure you've said that before, but it is funny. Like, it's all about your perception on reading, why you read, why you read in the past. Was it always homework? Mm-hmm. Did you have to do it for school? Is it something you had to do or that you were obligated to do? But to do it for fun? Oh, what a revelation.
Yeah. There you go. Well, so now that you know, overall, it seems like had an enjoyable experience with this one. What is there something specific you would like to read next in romance? Like, are you looking for, I mean, you mentioned like a poly story, or would you like to read historical? Like, what tickles your fancy?
Oh, something historical would be fun, but like dirty historical.
Ooh,
really dirty, like haystack sex, you know?
Okay.
That would be fun. And just like, the dirtier the better. That's all I have to say.
Okay.
Like, and yeah, I obvious anything, even, you know, man on man, woman on woman, both together or all of them together. Like, I'm open.
Everybody's with everybody. Yeah, I will say right off the bat, if you're looking for something more on the erotic side of historical, Nicola Davidson, I think, is a great place to start. And she writes multiple poly stories. She plays with like gender roles and dynamics in her books, and they're usually on the shorter side. They're usually more novella based. And then if you want purely male, although I think she's also written female, Kat Sebastian also writes a lot of queer historical romance. So there you go.
I also, what about science fiction? Is there any science fiction romance stuff? Erotica.
There's a lot of aliens these days.
I don't mean aliens. necessarily. I just mean like futuristic stuff, but whatever.
Yeah, that's one where I'm definitely not going to be the best person to recommend
Star Trek
because
sucks.
I just tend to prefer contemporary, but I will say a lot of people will recommend Ruby Dixon, who has it's like a 10 book series I think is about aliens. I'll admit I haven't read it. Okay. But
I'll check out Nicola. She sounds interesting.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. Okay. I've really liked her books. I know we did one of her books for the podcast before, and it was a while back. So you can always find the episode, listen, and then think, hey, maybe this is the one.
Yeah,
but,
that looks great. I was also going to mention earlier when you asked me about my exposure to romance novels, and I was just thinking a lot this week right before we started talking. You remember Fabio? You've heard of Fabio, right?
Yeah, I know
Fabio. Yeah, everybody knows Fabio. But Fabio was like the Harlequin romance cover model dude who made a whole career out of being just Fabio. And I just thought that was...
Yep.
He was a real... That was my kind of... understanding of sort of romance stuff.
And unfortunately today that is still a lot of people's assumption that is what romance is today is right. Fabio on these covers 25 years ago, that's what romance novels are today. And I think that's where a lot of the assumptions and stereotyping for the genre do come from is just sort of this outdated idea of what it once was. But like anything, you know, the genre evolves, the stories evolve, the characters change. We focus on different narratives and relationships. So it's silly to assume. I mean, I don't assume that about any other genre, that everything's going to change. It's still going to be a love story, but... Mm-hmm. You know, a love story today is going to look different than a love story in 1989.
I also appreciate that I feel like this genre is populated by a lot of female authors. I think that it's really cool because it's like I don't need to hear a man's... I mean, I'm sure there's men that do it, but I'm just saying like a male perspective on sex is just like, I'm not really interested.
And that's fair. That's totally fair. And there are... male authors, there are female authors, there are non-binary authors. It's really whatever you're looking for, whatever kind of lens you're looking for. Because I'm with you, I tend to prefer reading it from female creators just because I have an easier time identifying with that perspective. But I will say I think especially when it comes to a romance between two men that's written by a man who has relationships with other men. Right. I think that's a point of view that's absolutely worth
you know what? I guess I just meant I don't need to hear like a cis guy.
Yeah, no, I understand.
You know, you read a Norman Mailer book, or there's just some contemporary American authors that are male that they're always the ones who talk about their throbbing members and heaving bosoms and stuff. And it's just like anytime I read that, I just shut the book. I'm like, ugh. Barf.
I follow an entire TikTok account that just reads passages from books written by men describing women like they're all sex scenes like between men and women written from and none of them are romance novels, like none of them are actual romance novels. They're all, you know, highbrow fiction, and it's like, here's this story between this man and the prostitute that he saved from the streets. And I'm just like, unfortunately though, because it's like popularized fiction, that's I think what people get an idea of as like, oh, well, that's
right.
Romance novels are just going to be that. Like,
I guess it's like porn, right? Porn directed by a man is going to be basically men want to see. Yeah. And it's just like, boring.
Exactly. It's all in that perspective, you know? Man, oh man. Well, this has been such a treat. I'm so excited that, one, I have a new podcast to check out because I am a Bones fan through and through. So I, for one, can't wait to listen.
Yeah, well, don't judge me. Like I said, we're just starting. So, you know, there's things that we're just going to grow and improve, okay? And like audio quality, all those things.
It's all part of the creative process. And well, and then secondly, I'm excited that, you know, you took a chance on just a book in general, because it seems like you don't have a lot of time that you spend reading. So I love that not only did you agree to read a book with me, but something that was so outside of your wheelhouse. And yeah, I'm glad. I loved hearing your thoughts about it. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was fun. Thank you so much.
Yay! Soon enough, we'll have you at, we'll upgrade your newbie status to boobie status. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm going to get myself a bodice ripper, some alien sex. Let's go.
Yeah, you're almost there. Almost there. Card carrying member soon enough.
Exactly.
Thanks so much for listening. Boobies and Newbies is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts. You can follow Boobies and Newbies on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Boobies Podcast.